John Newman with Wednesday's Blues. It feels like the right title for today. John Newman is on trumpet. Frank West is on tenor sax. Eddie Jones on bass. Tommy Flanagan on piano. And Oliver Jackson on drums. This is from Newman's 1960 album, Jive at Five. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrius Lead, and we pick up from where we left off with each other a couple of days ago. It seems like a long time. So let's get a couple of things out of the way. One is everybody's eyes are on Minneapolis, trying to figure out when is this case going to start, and will they start without a full jury or what? I mean, it's time. They should be able to put together a jury by now, but that's just me talking. So the court, the highest court in Minneapolis, the Court of Appeals in Minnesota, I should say, is yet to decide whether a third-degree murder charge will be added to the charges facing Derek Chauvin, charged in the killing of George Floyd. So that hasn't been decided, at least the last I checked. They're still trying to figure out whether the court is going to insist that a third charge of third-degree murder be added to the list of charges facing Chauvin. You know, as I touch on that, the reports I've read all talk about, well, most of them, I should say, most of them talked about the drugs in George Floyd's system at the time of his death. And he was supposed to have several different chemical accelerants in his bloodstream. But, you know, it then occurred to me that you don't read or you don't hear very much about the police being tested. What was in their system at the time that they dispatched a person from the earth? And I think it ought to be something to be considered and put into practice so that we are clear about what the profile looks like, both from the point of view of the person who is killed by the cops and the cops themselves. It would be helpful to know what their system looked like and what was found in their system. So we never read about that. We never hear about that. It's not an issue that is routinely discussed, certainly not in the way that the chemistry of the person dispatched from this earth. It's always, well, they had this in their system and that and the other. And of course, that is made known, and these tests are done so that, in terms of public information, the people reading about this would be inclined to believe, well, yes, this person was out of control. This person was under the heavy influence of drugs, illegal drugs at that. So I think it would be, it should be mandatory that I could understand if a profile, a chemical profile, is to be drawn up of the victim. I think the police officers interacting with that victim up until the time the victim is killed We should know about their blood chemistry as well. So far, three jurors, at least the last time I checked, three jurors have been seated. As we talked about before, they're looking for a full jury with alternates, at least four alternates. So we're talking about 16 jurors or potential jurors in all. We don't know how that's going to go, but there's no need to get really excited about it. It's just that we need to pay attention and to follow the progress, how long it takes to get from point A to point B, what is holding up things. They may be very legitimate reasons that we can't get a jury impaneled after all this time, but there may be very legitimate reasons. So we just need to note it. Write it down somewhere because you know it's going to pop up again in a significant way. Okay, the last time we talked about, just one more point I want to mention with this drug issue, the drug profile. They wasted no time telling us that in George Floyd's system, fentanyl and methamphetamines were found. So that was not accidental. That was made public so that the public, in turn, can factor that in evaluating the conduct of the police. Was and making the profile suggesting that at the time of the contact between Chauvin and George Floyd, Floyd was out of control. Floyd was under heavy influence of these illegal drugs. We have no idea of the chemical profile of Derek Chauvin. So that is what I was talking about. We need to have equal application here. And if the victim's blood chemistry is so important that it needs to be known, I think everybody, not just Chauvin, the other three police officers involved as well, we need to see what their profile looked like. And whether it might have had something to do with their conduct. All right. So Joe Biden is having a moment, a historic moment. And I'm not envying anything at all because, of course, this moment should bring some relief to the vast majority of Americans who are hurting at this time. But you know, it's at times like this, you think about it. It's all the naturally, he's president of the United States, I understand that. And so credit, great credit, is going to be given to Joe Biden. And he will love it, of course. It strengthens his hand in future endeavors. And in any event, it lifts his profile of a president who, in the normal world of politics, would have been cast aside. You know, they started going that route toward the time of the election, suggesting he was too old, his energy had been spent, and there wasn't too much to expect. And that's my point, exactly. My point is that at times like this, we need to recall and we need to put at front and center that Joe Biden's historic moment, and I'm not envying that at all, and I'm not suggesting that we ought to. I'm suggesting that we keep in mind, because these things get lost in the sauce very often, who was responsible for Joe Biden even being a candidate? And the answer to that question is Jim Clyburn, the congressman from South Carolina, without whom Biden would not have had a candidacy at all. It was Clyburn who rallied the forces all over the state and all over the South in particular behind Biden. Biden was dead in the water. He did not have a very promising future until Clyburn stepped into the picture and worked something that is nothing short of miraculous. He created a candidate. He energized Biden's campaign. He gave Biden the possibility of hope. And then the reality of victory. At times like this, we are likely to forget all of that. And I'm not suggesting that Biden doesn't deserve any credit. I'm saying we need to keep in mind how he became a candidate, who made him a viable candidate, a viable choice. Biden wasn't looking good at all until Jim Clyburn stepped into the breach and probably, without us seeing it, grabbed him by the scruff of his neck and said, "Listen here, Joe. I'm working hard to get you elected. Damn it, you better step up to the plate and act like you deserve it. Act like you appreciate what we're trying to do here." I like at moments, at particular moments, when everybody is likely to be so enthralled, you know, with the narrative that is created in the situation. And in this situation, the narrative is Joe Biden pulls off a winner here with the passage of this massive bill to help just about the widest swath of Americans, as we've seen in a long time. The country was and still is in a very deep hole economically. We have had one hit after the other, pummeling us into the ground, beating the wind out of us. And somehow Biden made it through. He made it through. But we should never, and neither should he, ever forget how that was possible, how it became possible for him to actually stay in the race to begin with, and now, of course, to win and to go on and achieve a monumental and historical feat. This is not an easy thing to do. And which brings me to the next point of we have to watch the counteroffensive, meaning that we know the Republicans can't wait to start a war. They can't wait to try to dismantle everything that was achieved, because they are aware that they are in a mess. Donald Trump has all but eviscerated the Republican Party. He has acquired it as his own personal possession, but they let him do that. They let him do it because Trump was the golden boy. Trump could make no error, no mistake. Trump was destined to rule the country and the rest of the world. Again, what I am celebrating on this day, and what I won't let get out of my head, is that it started really not with Biden, but with Clyburn, who made it possible for Biden to be a candidate and then to go on to win the presidency. All that work, that heavy investment by Blacks in this country specifically to pull off this feat, it will never be discussed. He would never get that kind of credit. But let us not fall into that trap. Let us remember how this started. It wasn't until Biden, who was losing and didn't look good for him at all, I think he was about to give up and pack it in. But Clyburn, we must not forget that man. Clyburn was the savior here. And at 80 years old, that ain't bad. That ain't bad. And you would notice he's not asking for recognition. He's not thumping his chest. He's not talking about what a great politician he is and what a great feat he pulled off and actually made it possible for Biden to run as a presidential candidate, seriously, to run as a presidential candidate, and then to top it off by winning. And now in this situation, while people are transfixed, and of course, naturally, I mean, Biden is the president, he will get a lot of credit for this. And he deserves credit. But we know how this started. We know who was responsible. We know who brought this about. And it should be known. It should be properly and thoroughly known. Remember that name, Jim Clyburn. And Biden should never be allowed to forget how he, A, became a bona fide presidential candidate, and then B, went on to win. Clyburn is the answer to both those questions. So I thought about that, and a smile came to my face when the reports were coming in that this mega package, this economic aid package going through Congress, getting to the point of being sanctioned and given the green light. And when that happens, what a great thing it would be, how historic it would be. And I said, somebody ought to step forward and say, thank you, Jim. Thank you, Jim, for saving my butt, for saving the Democratic Party's butt, by rallying the forces, by bringing together a party that was in disarray. The Republicans were a shoo-in at that point. And it wasn't until Biden entered the contest in South Carolina, where I could imagine a meeting with Clyburn just about coming within a half inch of knocking Joe Biden to the ground, saying, "What the hell are you doing? Don't you know you're losing? Can't you see you're losing this thing? I'm doing my best, but I'm not a miracle worker now." And I think Clyburn also was singularly responsible for inspiring Biden to come out of the doldrums and to become a fighting candidate, which is what people were longing to see. Up until that time, the wind was taken out of his sails. He was acting like an old man. So on this day, while people are celebrating, and especially the Democrats, and especially Joe Biden, I prefer to think of Jim Clyburn. And I prefer to celebrate the fact that he was the miracle worker, and he deserves the credit, and he should be exalted. All right, enough said about that. So I thought we will return to our conversation that we started. That conversation was about asking your personal perspective, your personal opinion, your personal thoughts about various topics, and how you rationalized or came to the conclusion that this is the best decision to make on a variety of subjects. So I will tell you the number to call. You know it by heart, 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And we conclude that feature that we started. We conclude it today. If you cooperate, make your answers nice and concise, and, you know, put some pep in your step, and let us hear what you're thinking on these various topics. So let's begin with questions, as we call them, questions. What are these questions? From the day before, we had, oh, great, I just lost my list. See what happens when you start getting old. It's amazing the skills. You can't handle more than one thing at a time. You can't do it. So let me see if I can find that. But I was asking, among the list of questions that we had, what is your view about the role of family? That attracted a lot of input and attention, and I found it to be very interesting, your reaction to that. Has it become too hard now simply to raise a family and to pick up from where our elders left off? Is it more onerous than it was before to do that? Although it was considered, you know, in the day, it was considered a natural path, a natural consequence. You grow up, you get married, and you start having kids. Okay, no big deal. Well, it's a big deal. Of course it's a big deal. And more people are thinking it is too big a deal. They can't handle it. And if more and more people are feeling this way, what kind of a future do we face? Bill from Long Island, perhaps you could answer that question.
Hey, Yatrice, how you doing?
Okay, Bill, how are you?
Good, good, doing well. Listen, before that, I just want to get to one thing that's really on my mind that's very bothersome to me. You were talking, and you sort of made it sound like Biden knows what's going on, which I find absolutely amazing. I mean, that's the question that we should be asking. Yesterday, he couldn't remember the name of the Pentagon. He couldn't remember the name of the Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin, who was standing 3 feet away from him. Do people out there find this extremely troubling?
Well, we talked about it here on this program, that we've been getting hints from time to time that Biden isn't exactly current with events, you know, that are happening right in the moment. And he seems a bit late to pick up on that.
That's pretty much an understatement.
I agree with you. I still have questions about his mental acuity, whether he's showing early signs of dementia. And I see some clues that I saw in my own mother, who from time to time would do the most inexplicable things. She had a very sharp mind, but sometimes it just wasn't clicking. Eventually she died with the disease, but that is an issue. And of course, nobody wants to broach it any more than they want to broach the question of, is or was Donald Trump mentally out of it as president? I said it very early on. In fact, I don't think that was a discussion in the general media when I was discussing it. You can see there's something wrong with this man.
I disagree with you on that one, but I think you're talking about two totally separate situations. Biden every single day is saying the most bizarre things, and they're not getting covered or involved in these absences of thought.
But they really are not different things at all. We have two men at different times in our history as president of the United States, exhibiting from time to time, in the case of Donald Trump, extremely disturbing kinds of behaviors. And it wasn't until, in fact, even after, I should say, the national group of psychiatrists and psychologists actually issued a report documenting their concerns as well. And even after they did that, still nothing, still absolutely nothing. Why his lying, I mean, to the point of, there's something wrong here. Why does this man feel a need to lie about everything? Is the sun shining?
That they say he lied thousands of times, and each time he said the Russian situation was a hoax, they count it as a lie. And now, I mean, we know that was a hoax, and that when he was saying it was a hoax, it wasn't a lie. But they counted it as a lie, and he said it every day over and over again.
The point of it is who the they are.
The media. The media.
Well, that's what I mean. They're not experts on any of that stuff. The psychiatrists are experts. The psychologists are experts on how the mind works. And they were very clear that Donald Trump presented a clear and present danger to the nation.
Donald Trump is no longer in office.
I'm sorry?
Now we have some... No, Donald Trump is no longer in office. Now we have somebody in office who's definitely a clear and present danger.
Yeah, but that does not clear the deck as it concerns Donald Trump. Okay, so he's no longer in office.
That has nothing to do with Donald Trump. Donald Trump is gone. We have a man office
who's
mentally unstable.
Donald Trump was unstable even before he got into office.
Okay,
he remained unstable for his entire time in office. Major questions about his conduct, major questions about his psychological makeup and so forth. Even his own niece, who's a psychologist, wrote that book, Too Much and Never Enough, in which she documents and makes the case that this is not, you know, late onset behavior when it comes to Trump. This was early manifested in Trump, but people chose not. The people who should have made decisions and the pronouncements that should have been public about this and the concerns and the debate should have been public about it never occurred, even to today. Nothing is discussed about Trump.
But are you making the argument that because Donald Trump may have been mentally deficient, it's okay to have a demented person in the White House now who can't remember from minute to minute?
That's what you're saying. That's the conclusion you have come to. That's not my conclusion at all. When you ask me a question like that, it means that that's where you would like the conversation to go, because you have come to that conclusion yourself, that I am making the case against Trump, but refuse to do the same with Joe Biden. No, not at all.
No. So there's no reason to bring Donald Trump up now, because Joe Biden
has every reason to bring Donald Trump in, because I am also bringing attention to the intention of the various worlds that mattered and that could have made a difference in the outcome of things, including Joe Biden would even run for president. If this situation with Trump were investigated thoroughly and responsibly by professionals, chances are Biden would not have run.
Well, I don't know how you can come to that conclusion, but the
very
fact
simply.
Very simply.
Right. If you see how professionals are treating or how the different institutions are treating the subject that they consider to be of paramount importance to the well-being of the nation, what goes for Trump obviously would apply to Biden.
Yeah, I don't see the connection. There's really no connection. One is demented. One wasn't. You may have not agreed.
How
with
do you know? Are you a professional?
Because I've heard many people speak about Donald Trump. Some say he's narcissistic, egotistical. They never said he was demented. And I've heard psychiatrists speak on this also.
Of course, you heard psychiatrists. But what do you think then of his own niece, who said he was demented?
Well, there's family dynamics there that I think were troubling. You either want to have an honest conversation
or you want to go tit for tat. You can't win with the tit for tat approach. I have more against Trump than you do.
No, I'm not looking to win. I'm just looking to make the point that I think the country is in trouble because we elected somebody who's mentally deficient, and it was known before, and it's very obvious now. And the media does not seem to be focusing on it. That's my only point, and I think it's extremely troubling.
But then, you see, you're going to have to draw parallels here. How do you explain the fact that Donald Trump was in office for a full term?
I'm not talking about Donald Trump. We're not talking about Donald Trump.
No detailed analysis. There was no hue and cry. There was no investigation.
They investigated
Nobody
Donald Trump
looked at him as a guy with serious, serious mental problems. Nobody wanted to deal with that.
They investigated Donald Trump for 3.5 years. There was all kinds of hearings. I mean, we saw it. We watched it on TV every single day, 24/7. There was a constant onslaught against the guy.
Were those choreographed?
I'm sorry?
Were the hearings credible?
I don't think that they were credible to begin with. I don't think that I think it was a political hit. Obviously, they didn't find anything.
A hit against Donald Trump?
Absolutely. I know you don't like him. And I know you have the Trump derangement syndrome like everybody else. You can't get over it.
Now, when you're getting into categorizing me, you're in trouble. Because I'll go with you toe-to-toe. You'll lose. You will lose. Don't attempt it. Save yourself. When you pile on to the situation that we had of Donald Trump, who, by the way, still must answer for sexual assault charges. This is a president of the United States.
And what about Tara Reid and Joe Biden? He never answered for that. The media never followed up on that.
I am not going to get into a tit for tat, who did this and who did that. I'm saying in both cases, there has been insufficient investigation of the premise that both presidents had and may still have deep psychological issues or age-related diseases and disabilities. I am not here to cheerlead for one against the other. I was one of the first journalists on the very day of his inauguration. I went at Donald Trump saying, how is it possible that the nation is commemorating his inauguration when it's so clear that this man should never be allowed close to any official office? How is it that I was the only one seeing that at the time?
Well, I don't know. I guess 75 million people are wrong then. And you're right.
I'm not discussing whether who is wrong or who is right. I'm discussing the fact that I saw it and I called it publicly. I did not hesitate. I said it. I said it on air. Nobody else did. You didn't.
How do you know?
Because you didn't.
How do you know?
I would know if you did.
As a matter of fact, you know, I was listening to your show a few weeks back. And you brought up something interesting, and you brought up the fact that you don't want to see the president or the president-elect having to sit with his wife at his side all the time, as if you were denying the fact that he's mentally incompetent. And you knew it then, and you know it now.
You're wrong.
The situation.
That's what you just said. Don't put words in my mouth, or don't try.
But you didn't say that.
I said it
was
unusual, but I didn't say I expressed any derision about it. I didn't express any negative comments about it. I just thought it was unusual.
I think you should listen to that tape. You definitely did express derision about it, and you sounded frustrated at the fact that the president needs his wife at his side.
No, I never said that.
Well,
I will never say
exactly
that a president shouldn't have his wife at his side. If you know, that's what the first lady is for, any more than any other president, you know,
no, but they're an item. When you talked about it, you expressed it differently. You expressed it in the form of why does the president need his wife at his side so much answering for him? That's basically the context of what you were saying. If you listen to the tape.
I challenge you to produce that piece of evidence. Send me a tape.
Okay. I mean, I don't know if I could get that show back on. The day that you said that, I mean, you were aware of the fact that he was not well, and you expressed it in that way, saying that he shouldn't. You're frustrated to see that he has to have the potential president has to have his wife sitting at his side answering for him, and that caused some frustration. And I agreed with you. I 100% agree.
I did not say that it caused frustration. I just said, and later on, I also talked about the fact that some people are acting as if they are co-presidents, or just like I criticized the vice president for that. You are elected vice president. We should not be, it should not sit well with us that your husband is acting as the co-vice president. It should not sit well with us. We did not elect him. We did not elect Joe Biden.
Or his wife.
Joe Biden.
Right. Jill Biden. Exactly. I agree. You're right. And that's the way I took it.
There's a role that she is entitled to play as the First Lady of the United States. But you can't be all up in it. You're not expected to make policy and... You're too visible. It's a very uncomfortable feeling that you're giving people. Step back and let the president be president. If you want to be president or co-president, run your own campaign.
Exactly. Anyway, I don't want to take up any more of your time. I do appreciate the chat.
All right. Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Okay, thanks.
For calling in. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. Let's see. Who's up next. I can't see who's up next. I can't see who's up next. Oh, yes. Muhammad from New York. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, Professor Utrecht.
Oh, good afternoon to you. I'm no longer a professor.
Could you repeat that, please?
I get what you endure. I get your point. So thank
you. Okay, and I also say I hope your condition continues to improve. And I would like to also say good afternoon to all my classmates. Listen, I learned so much from them also. Just going back to yesterday with the family is the basic unit of a nation. As the penny is the basic unit to the dollar, the cell is the basic unit to the body. It's very important that we continue families because the people in the background that you don't see and hear from, and one is Robert Mercer, they feel that in the years to come, they will be a minority. And one thing they would like to do, and from the very beginning, is try to break up the family. During the captivity of the people they call Africans, the first thing they did was separated the families. Mother went one way, the father went one way, the children went another way. That way you lose your language, your history, your religion, and you come up speaking the language of your captivator or the one who brought you over here. So the family is very important. It's the basic unit to a nation. Now, I'm going to switch real quick, so I want to give other people a chance. I'm a psychotherapist, psychoanalyst. Trump suffered from delusional disorder, and I have
Don't go there.
Nope. You haven't
had the opportunity to personally assess this man, so don't offer an analysis because you're putting yourself in trouble.
Okay, thank you. I'll take that with... a thousand advices. Okay, that's what I just want to basically say about the family. Very important that you keep families together. The basic unit to a nation is the family, and it's a system. Okay, let me let someone else say something before time run out. Thank you very much for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Yes. Thank you for calling in. 888-874-4888. What are you going to comment about? Let's hear what you're thinking, and let's hear if your thinking is right. At 888-874-4888. I keep reminding us all that this is a very important exercise in equipping all of us, myself included, in how you use the medium to convey your thoughts, to make a point, to debate a point, to disagree. Understanding the medium makes you an efficient person. People can't get, they could debate you. That doesn't mean that they overwhelm you. And if you know what you're doing and you get the hang of it, the hang of how to use your position on air or in newspaper expressing an opinion, there's a discipline to it. And the better you get at it, the better it is that you could be depended on to stand in for people who are just terrified of doing it. And so we lose their voices. So we need people to step forward and learn how to use a medium, learn how to do it. It's vital. Even if you never actually do it, but you have the skills, at any time, you can have those skills kick in and you become a very valuable articulator of a point of view. That's very important work. And in our community, as people who say we are progressive and so forth, whatever your political stripes, even if you have no stripes at all, it is very important to understand media. This is going to be governing our lives. And it will go through some transmutations from time to time, but we should know how that works. How do we express our views? How do we take on views that we don't agree with? How do we persuade people to listen to what we have to say? And you get better and better at it. That is a skill everybody should acquire. Everybody should have some working knowledge of media and how it works and what is necessary when you are on radio, what's necessary when you're on television, what's necessary when you're on any medium at all that reaches out to people and people are reaching back. And that is called communication. People are trying to connect. Well, you have to know the medium. You have to really understand how it works. And therefore understand how you can make it work so that you can be efficient in the transmission of your ideas and your thoughts. Very important. And this is not, for egotistical purposes. This is simply the science of learning how something works. If you learn how something works, you're that much more advanced than anybody who could be your competition or who thinks that they are your competition. But no, you know what you're doing. You know what you're doing. And that's what we don't have a lot of. We have people who just talk off the top of their heads. But do they know that You should sound like you have an organized thought. You should sound like you have, you have two main points, three main points, whatever it is, but you have them. And you are going to proceed in a methodical way to tell them. This is vitally important. It's becoming even more increasingly so important, because soon enough, I contend it's already happening, you either will be able to cope and run with the media as it unfolds and it evolves, and you can have a chance at influencing public opinion, or you're going to get left behind because you don't know what you're doing and it becomes painfully evident. No. Have a good point of view, a strong point of view. That's fine. But learn the science of it. There is a science to it. And this last interview recently done with the Sussexes of Britain with Oprah Winfrey has pointed to where things are going. You cannot be in particular positions in life of influence and still don't know how you, what influence means, how you get your message across. Everybody else is telling your story and you can't tell your own. Not good. So you want to get more and more comfortable with the idea of a streamlined thought. You want to do a lot more reading and broaden your view. And you get more and more comfortable in any scenario you can function. You can make your points, no matter what the subject. And this, I don't mean to overstress it, but we need these kinds of soldiers to help us tell our story. But if we don't have people who don't know how to use media effectively, I'm not suggesting that you become a media mogul. I'm suggesting that you understand various forms of media. But what they all have in common is that there's a science to how and why they operate. Well, that brings us to the end of our program today. It went by like so fast. I could barely believe my eyes when I looked at the clock. But we are out of time, but let's talk tomorrow and see where we go from there. Thanks so much for calling in and contributing, and I always value what you say, even if I disagree. But that's the whole point. Even if you disagree with me, even if I disagree with you, as long as we can make a case, this is what I'm thinking and why I'm thinking it. And that's all that is required. We'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.